Welcome to episode 31 of the Payments Show podcast. My name is Satwantful, and today I'll be speaking to Doug Cavanis, who is the Vice President of Business-to-Business Strategy and Partnerships at Cleverbridge. Cleverbridge is a global payment company which provides e-commerce and subscription management solutions for monetizing digital goods, online services, and software as a service. Enjoy the episode. Hello, Doug. Welcome to the show.
Satwant, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2021.
Thank you.
I hope it's a much nicer year for the world, actually.
Likewise, I have big hopes for 2021.
Yeah, definitely. Well, hopefully within three or four months, we can all be back out into the real world and having coffees and meeting people again. Seems like so long ago.
Exactly.
Where are you joining us from today?
So I'm in San Rafael, California. It's Marin County, just north of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco.
Oh, beautiful part of the world.
Yeah, thank you.
It'll be great for you to introduce yourself. I know you've had an interesting career. You've worked at companies like Digital River and many others. So it'll be great to get a bit of background about yourself and an overview of the company and what you guys do.
Yeah, great. So I've been in technology for well over 20 years. I actually had my first taste of e-commerce and the internet back in 1997. I was working at a software publisher as general manager. I acquired a company that had an internet offering, which we viewed as core for us, appealing to an SMB market. And so I've been fascinated with the internet and e-commerce since that time. I've worked in various roles. I've been a general manager in software. I've been in various business development and partnership roles. I've been a VP of marketing for a publisher. And I've worked at Cleverbridge for just about over 9 years. And maybe how I got the Cleverbridge, I had helped start a company that did on-demand media, particularly for the game and software industry, where we worked routinely with people who were selling goods and services through e-commerce. That was a successful undertaking. And one of the companies that was a potential client of ours, actually Digital River, decided they needed to buy us. So I ended up getting acquired into Digital River, worked there, enjoyed that experience for 3 years. After that time, I decided I wanted to kind of maybe go out on my own again and see what was out there. I did consulting for a variety of online companies. And during that time in the ensuing year, one of the projects that I was contacted about was actually with Cleverbridge. Cleverbridge hired me. Eventually, I became their head of sales for account management and new client acquisition. That was a great experience doing that globally, but then pivoted within Cleverbridge to help expand our offering for companies that want to sell to B2B customers. So today at Cleverbridge, I'm responsible for our strategy for B2B use cases, as well as our partnerships. Maybe just a little bit about Cleverbridge, because Cleverbridge was founded in 2005, and the internet and the way people buy has changed dramatically since then, obviously. When Cleverbridge started, the founders said, we want to break down the global barriers for software companies to be able to sell to their customers. And they created a more innovative solution that made it really easy for companies to sell in over 150 countries quite easily. Back in 2005, though, e-commerce was almost like this silo. People were more focused at that time on selling products, not selling customers. And so it was quite interesting. E-commerce was really a silo storefront back in 2005. But what's happened and today Cleverbridge processes well over 1.5 million orders on behalf of our software clients. So we work with about 300 software clients like McAfee, Avira, Malwarebytes, and others, helping them operate their storefronts on a global basis. But as the world has shifted, people have taken on SaaS, people are selling subscriptions, the customer relationship has become paramount. As customers' expectations have evolved, they increasingly want self-service, they're looking for frictionless buying experiences. E-commerce has evolved to where we're now integrated more in not just an online storefront, but in more of what had been traditionally human selling processes. So that's a little bit about me and a little bit about Cleverbridge.
Excellent. Good stuff. Well, I came across the company. It was interesting. I bought some software from one of your customers, Acronis, some backup software.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite right for me. But it was interesting because I think I was flagged as a potential fraud. I must have had certain points because I bought that software with my Australian credit card, but I'm obviously in the UK, so it might have flagged something. What got me interested was the flow. I got an email saying, we're going to get somebody to approve this. And you think, oh, well, how long is that going to take? It was done within, I didn't even know, it was very quick. But then the second thing was when I found that the software wasn't quite meeting my needs, it wasn't quite what I expected, I got the refund. And then the license key was removed from my account as well. So it seemed to me like a fantastic solution straight away, because I thought, well, there's so many companies I've bought software from in the past, you still have the key. Yeah. Nobody has looked at the whole workflow. And if we just look at the purchase, there's many companies out there that can sell the software. And then the key comes maybe after an hour and the receipt comes 2 hours later. And it's just a very broken process. It seems that most software sales are done through a regular payment system where software has just been bolted on.
Yeah.
I wanted to get in touch with somebody from Cleverbridge because I just thought this looks like a solution that's really well designed fully for the software world. And clearly it is, as you just said.
Well, I appreciate hearing your great experience. We started Cleverbridge really with the intent to make it super easy for companies to provide a great buying experience for their customers. One of the things we pride ourselves actually on is, in terms of that workflow, is having really good fraud screening, not only to get rid of the transactions that aren't right, but also to make sure that we accept all the valid orders that we can. So we try to really streamline that whole process. So if there is a question mark, we try to resolve it very quickly. But you're right. The entire experience is designed as a cloud-based solution to make it super easy for the publisher and for the buyer to go through that whole experience.
Yeah.
And one of the things too, just like as an example, we actually have transaction-based customer support there to help the buyer in 7 different languages. In Japan, the customer expectations are so high. They say in the United States, customer is king. They say in Japan, the customer is God. And when a customer calls our customer service line in Japan, they generally are going to hear the phone answer within 1 or 2 seconds. Like the expectation is that the phone is answered before it even rings. So we really try localizing the whole experience, whether it's making sure that the billing information is corrected in the format you would expect, having the right tax information, having the language that you would expect, having the payment methods that you would expect. So,
yeah, I like that. I wish more companies thought like that.
Yeah, I've spent a little bit of time in Japan and I enjoyed actually being able to bring a customer service complaint at a restaurant to the manager's attention. And it was fascinating to see how adept they were at really wanting to make that a resolved situation.
Yeah, excellent. So let's get into the meat of the solution. I saw that your offering is explained really nicely on your website, but it's got 4 main sections. So your solution helps businesses to manage, monetize, optimize. So they're the 3 points. And then the last one is you offer a B2B commerce solution as well. But we'll touch on a few of those in those 4 areas. So in terms of manage, you help businesses to manage customer data, self-service, subscription management, compliance. Then if we move on to monetize, in addition to the obvious payment processing, you've got things like revenue retention, which I'd love to talk about in more detail because it's all very well getting a customer, but keeping them going is a challenge sometimes. And then you've got taxation and fraud in that monetize area as well. In the optimization, you've already touched on localization, but there's things like email marketing, testing, reporting, analytics. Let's talk about those and then maybe how you differ from some of your competitors in the market.
I think your flow works great. Maybe I'll just contrast. So today, and you know this from the companies you work with, it can be a valid approach to want to build everything on your own, but it can almost be like getting a box with different bolts and nuts, screws. And you kind of look at this and you figure, how do we do this? And then you're often in this discovery process. Oh, we didn't think about having a payment method that actually somebody in the Netherlands would use. Oh, so now we got to secure that. Or, hey, we have to collect taxes. What Cleverbridge tries to do is to remove all that complexity. So we bring to you, the customer, a complete solution with everything you need to sell. So you're not having to pull different pieces and cobble them together. So from a managed standpoint, CleverBridge, I think one thing I would just highlight is we act in most cases as what's called a merchant of record. So that means that all of those challenges with things like PCI compliance, having to set up and maintain payment contracts, handling things like subscription management, that's our problem. And so when there's a taxable event in the customer transaction, that's our tax nexus, not that of the OEM or the vendor. So from Manage, we take on all those headaches. That's not something that the client has to do because of the Manage component. So we can help manage that customer relationship on behalf of our customer through the entire lifecycle, including the renewal event. Does that make sense?
Yeah. During COVID, I've read many articles that businesses are selling for the first time ever online.
Yeah.
To the point where they're not just selling maybe in the US for the first time online, but globally, because they may be able to ship very easily, but they haven't understood the implications around things like taxation, especially. So that alone would save so much overhead, especially a small or medium business.
Yeah, and I have to say, I talk with technology companies that have sales well over $1 billion. They've never sold direct before or never sold direct through e-commerce. They've traditionally relied on channel partners. And maybe if they have direct sales, it's through human salespeople. But in terms of taking an order at midnight on a weekend in Germany, they're not set up to do that. So if they work with a company like CleverBridge, some of these companies use us and they sell, say, $20 million of business online, and they might have one or two people in their company working with us. So it's a very high leverage in terms of what they can achieve.
How does the solution help with tax? Does it just make it easier to calculate the tax, or do you keep the money on their behalf and pay it? What is the actual benefit of your taxation feature?
Well, I guess it's multiple, but so we're operating as the reseller or merchant of record in most cases. So the tax nexus is CleverBridge's, not our clients. So I'd say it's multiple. One is it's risk reduction, because many companies, as you probably can imagine, are not doing taxes correctly. And they are creating a liability not only for themselves in the EU or whatever jurisdiction, but also for their customer. That's one of the major benefits of CleverBridge, is we reduce that risk because it's our tax nexus and we own that tax issue. So it's a better customer experience. They're getting the form in the EU in a VAT compliant manner. Many companies are not doing things correctly for that customer, and that creates additional manual workflow for that customer to correct that. Does that help?
Yeah.
Those would be two examples.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic for somebody's new to the game. They've actually just eliminated 10 years of hard work and just go straight to a solution like yours and have nothing to worry about.
Exactly.
Let's move on to the monetized part of your solution. I mentioned earlier around revenue retention. I'd love for you to talk about that in more detail and more generally around the billing and invoicing and payment processing. What are the benefits?
So one of the things, some of the companies that work with us don't have their own subscription management platform. We actually have a very robust product catalog. We have a subscription management capability to manage any kind of subscription offering they'd have, whether it be usage-based, one-time purchase, monthly subscription, annual subscription. We can handle all of those different business models or a combination of them. We also bring the payment methods that they need to be able to transact, or if the customer needs to have, say, a purchase order buying process and offer purchase orders to people in Japan and Honduras, we're set up for that. So from a monetized standpoint, we bring compatibility or support of not only different business models, but also the means of billing and collection, collecting the payments.
It may not be obvious to everyone, but in terms of the payment processing, let's say you're in Italy or Netherlands or wherever, does your solution just simply hook into any payment processor in any given country through a simple API? Or I'm imagining you don't go through the process of approving hundreds of payment processors all over the world, or am I wrong?
Correct. So in most cases where we act as the merchant of record, we're bringing the set of payment relationships so that we can transact effectively in each of those local markets. That's not something our client, in most cases, they don't need to worry about that. So one of the things, and I'll just highlight this for your listeners because it's a key thing that they should know about, is that if you're processing credit cards, having a local entity to be able to process that is super important. And you probably know this, but with cross-border payments, if you say are selling from the US into Germany, you need a local European entity. The downside, if you don't, is you're going to have card acceptance rates probably 15 to 20 points lower without that. So that's, again, because Cleverbridge has legal entities around the world, we're able to have those local processing contracts. Again, that's something we take on. It's not something our client even needs to think about.
Is it like a tick box, whatever payment processor somebody wants to use?
Well, no, in this case, we know what's going to be most effective for the customer. So we'll present to you as the buyer the right payment methods that would be appropriate for you in that locale. So if you're in the Netherlands, we know that 50% of online transactions happen through a payment method called Ideal. So we would present Ideal. We would present credit card. We might present PayPal, direct debit, wire transfer. If you're in Japan, we know that a large portion of B2C buyers want to buy through a payment method called Konbini, which is a crazy payment method where you have to go in and you prepay basically in a 7-Eleven. And then that gives you basically a voucher or a credit that you can apply for that online transaction. So we try to present the local payment method that you would expect to see and then let you choose as the buyer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. Okay. It takes a lot of mental overhead and stress away from the customer.
Yeah. And yeah, we find doing things like that, it gets to the next thing, which is optimize. That's part of optimizing that experience. So when a customer feels, a lot of it is trust, when they feel like the vendor understands them, is reputable, the conversion rates or the average order values go up. And I'll give you maybe just to cite one statistic. I mentioned Japan, a lot of people buy through Konbini. We did a test and we offered Konbini to customers. Even though only 12% of people actually use Konbini in the transaction, the cart conversion rates, those visitors to buyers, that rate went up 18%. And so to us, that was a signal that what we were doing by offering Konbini, it was showing we understood the customer. It was a localization, whether they use that payment method or not.
And it's probably a demographic thing there because younger people are more comfortable with that kind of technology, I suppose.
Yeah, although in Japan, the average buyer is actually way older than in the USA. I think the average online buyer is something like 45 years of age. So the buyer expectations might be different also generationally as well as culturally. So
that's fascinating. Bit of a side question. Do you find that the way that a company sells software changes if the ability to do subscription payments is easier?
Yes.
You know, going from, they might have been selling perpetual licenses just because it was so difficult historically to do anything else. And do you find that when you get maybe a new customer that's onboarded, that perhaps they change over time?
Exactly. Like Malwarebytes is a client of ours that actually started out with antivirus security software that was sold on a perpetual basis. They actually evolved into becoming a very successful subscription company. So we've helped a number of clients go through that migration. In the case of Malwarebytes, the number one change was actually cultural within their own organization, getting used to selling subscriptions and feeling good about that, that they were providing value to their customer. But it changes everything because you're now not selling products. You're really cultivating a customer relationship and reinforcing value throughout that life cycle. Customer data becomes more important. The number of communications that you're doing goes up. The billing cycle becomes very different. One of the key things that I've seen kind of evolve just in my lifetime within e-commerce is customer centricity. And around customer centricity, making sure that you're collecting data on that customer in one place so that you can provide this seamless experience regardless of how or when that customer wants to buy or do anything. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And in fact, the other thing I wanted to touch on being customer-centric was coming back to revenue retention, things like intelligence around if somebody's card number changes because it's simply expired or they've had to order a new one. That alone can decline a transaction with other payment systems. And you guys have got logic built in. Do you want to talk a bit about how that saves businesses time and hassle?
Yeah, we call it retention tools. And over years, we've built pretty sophisticated retention tools. And Maybe just one data point. In the United States, I think 20% of cards expire every year. So if you have an ongoing billing relationship, you can anticipate 20% of those cards will expire. So both from a customer experience standpoint, we call this involuntary churn. The customer didn't choose to churn, but their credit card happened to expire. So we try to anticipate those. We have a card updater service where most credit card issuers will, if you're a member of the service, update that card automatically for you. For those cases where that's not happening, we will guess what the new expiration date is. We can also proactively contact the customer and let them know, hey, dear customer, your subscription is going to come up for renewal in 30 days. We notice that your credit card needs to be updated. Please click this button to update your payment details. So there's a lot that we do in the back end that our customer never or our clients never have to even think about because we're managing that. And it also results not only in a higher renewal rate, often 10 to 20 points higher, but it also results in a better customer experience.
You touched on it earlier, increasing the average order value.
Yeah.
There are so many businesses and companies that have all sorts of ad campaigns, SEO optimization, and goodness knows what else to get people to their site. And many people still see it as a success by selling the one thing that got them there. But as companies like Lead Pages and ClickFunnels have shown, you actually want to sell more things to the same person while they're there.
Yeah.
Because the cost of getting them there in the first place is so high, and they may not come back if they're a guest shopper. Do you want to talk about how increasing the average order value can be done with your solution in maybe a couple of ways?
Yep, maybe just to mention three different points in the customer lifecycle. So we do offer part of our solutions. We offer digital marketing services to help get customers to your site or to your storefront or landing page. And then through a partnership with Drift, one of the services we offer is conversational marketing. So to be able for these, particularly a higher velocity customer where maybe that order values are not, it doesn't warrant having a human involved all the time, we're able to help companies do that kind of communication on an automated basis. So we get them there and then we help nurture them to be able to buy. And then once they're in a shopping cart or some sort of buying experience, we help our customers do a lot of A/B testing to figure out what's going to be the most effective cross-sell or upsell messages to put in that cart, even like what color the cart page should be, or should it be a two-page cart experience or a three-page or a one-page? We test all of that. In terms of doing cross-sell and upsell, we insert automatic upsell and cross-sell offers in the cart as a routine thing. That's one of the capabilities. And with digital marketing services, being able to nurture that customer relationship prior to a renewal event. So that can be customer success messages. And then it can also be things like we mentioned, like making sure that their payment details are updated, giving them the respect of letting them know that their subscription is coming up for renewal, and maybe offering an offer on top of that. Hey, add another seat and get X percent discount. So because of our total solution, we're able to help customers optimize through that lifecycle.
Fantastic. You're seeing that in the B2B space, buyer expectations and behavior is shifting. And I, for one, think, thank goodness for that, because so many B2B solutions that I've seen in the past don't often have very good UI or user experience or anything. I use the analogy that when you join a new company, the difference in their beautiful website compared to their intranet, which doesn't get any love, is often the thing that I've seen in the past from a consumer buying experience to a business-to-business one. And in fact, a lot of business-to-business purchasing is still fax or email orders, and it's just stuck in another era. Yeah. So I'd love for you to talk about just the solution in general and why it's good. And then some of the comments you made before we spoke today around how things are changing in terms of their expectations and what you're doing to fix those.
Great. So maybe I'll start with the buyer, the B2B buyer. That has changed dramatically, and it's probably informed by our lives as B2C buyers in our own lives. You know, we're used to buying on Amazon, we're used to buying on Netflix and Spotify. I think obviously the pandemic has accelerated this. I know you're speaking from the UK today. I read an interesting statistic. It was something like in October, 40% of retail purchases by consumers in the UK were done online, if you exclude groceries. 40%. Now, that number came down afterwards, but then the numbers in the U.S. were very high, too. I think they're around 30%. We bring these buyer expectations as consumers into our B2B lives. And B2B selling companies are hearing that from their customers. They're saying, why do I need to wait for a salesperson to be available on a Tuesday? I want to buy now at night and it's on a weekend. Forrester, McKinsey, Trust Radius, they've all have identified the fact that the majority of B2B buyers, they want self-service and e-commerce options. And we also know that buyers want to choose when and how and where they get information. Most of the buyer journey is done before they speak with a salesperson. So those are like background trends. Then it's also generationally accelerated. Trust Radius did a report. They found out that 60% of B2B buyers today are millennials, 25 to 39 years of age. Millennials, and even the younger generation below that, they want self-service. So B2B companies are hearing that. At the same time, B2B companies are trying to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of their sales organizations. They're looking at ways that they can invest in automation to free up the time of salespeople to be more productive. If you don't mind, one statistic from Salesforce research I absolutely find fascinating.
Go for it.
The average salesperson only spends 34% of their time selling. Majority is spent on busy work, paperwork, etc. So for every hour you can save a sales rep in a 40-hour work week, you've saved that sales rep 7% of it, or you've created 7% of additional time for selling. So that's both on the B2B buyer standpoint and also on the B2B seller standpoint. You've got these self-service expectations and you've got B2B organizations wanting their sales organizations to be more effective and efficient. So there have been these online storefronts. But so here's an example of maybe where a B2B buyer is using our solution. We have an integration with Salesforce as an example, where when a sales rep is generating a quote in Salesforce CRM, they can click a checkbox. Now, rather than just emailing a PDF quote to the customer, they're emailing a PDF quote with an e-commerce buy link. The customer can click that link. They can enter their payment details. The cart is already pre-populated with the quote elements, the upsell, cross-sells, and the customer's contact details. So literally, to complete that transaction, the customer's entering a credit card number or some other payment information, confirm the order's completed, we collect the payment on behalf of our client, everyone's happy. A client of ours, SmartBear, their software company, they implemented this type of workflow, and they found that that one workflow saved each sales rep 18 hours a month. That increased the time available for selling by like 29%. And then they were able to take a lot of those customers and then manage them for renewals, not even having to have a sales rep intervene. So the idea was free up sales rep to focus on higher value selling. I'd say with most of the companies we're working with today in software and digital products, most of them are using Salesforce as a system of record, sometimes even managing their subscriptions from Salesforce. So that would be one really important way. The other is if you have an online storefront, making sure that when a customer buys on the online storefront, it also updates the records in Salesforce or the other CRM.
Yeah. I know this is slightly to the side of what we're discussing, but I think it's going to have a big impact that I don't see enough discussion on, which is that because of self-service and so many of these types of solutions, the basic questions can be answered on the website, but you're probably contacting them because you've got some more detailed information that you need. And often if you get to a sales rep, they may not know that answer anyway.
Yeah.
Especially in the IT world, you get the scenario, I'll get my technical person to help. And then you might waste another day. And because technical resources are even more scarce, it might be several days, especially in my last job. So I think that really in future, a sales rep might have to be pretty skilled. And I pretty much guarantee it that in the IT world, especially, they're going to have to be able to actually do things with the tech that they're selling, in addition to having good commercial skills. Would you agree?
I completely agree. I think at minimum, they're going to have to be adept at being part of an orchestration about providing a better customer experience, which will involve using digital tools like e-commerce, CRM, hopefully through AI and other tools. Also, sales reps will be armed with more insights to take action with the customer in an appropriate way. I think that's one of the areas I see a lot happening in the future in sales technology. And you probably saw some of that when you were at AWS, I would guess.
Yeah, depending on the area. Yeah.
Yeah.
They could probably do a better work on their internal sales tools.
Yeah.
They're a very advanced company in terms of what they offer.
Yeah.
But like any sales org, they have their challenges.
Forrester talks about this, and I don't remember the research paper, but they talk about what will be required of B2B salespeople in the future. And it's a much deeper understanding of the customer's business and then leveraging or orchestrating the tools at their command in their company to really speak to resolving business problems.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. A lot of tech companies, the training that they put their staff on is often all product focused.
Yeah.
And actually nothing to do with the customer's metrics they're trying to hit financially. So I agree.
Yeah.
But I think that was a tangent that was important to discuss because all these things interlink with each other, don't they? One huge saving in a payment system can create opportunities elsewhere and might require you to skill up 100 people in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
If somebody wants to sign up for CleverBridge and implement it, start to end, how long does that take? How complicated is it? And do you need a SWAT team to roll it out?
So I'd say it usually is a matter of weeks. One of the faster implementations we did with this, a company had migrated, I think it was 5 international storefronts, about a $10 million business within 21 days. I'd say the number one challenge would be, what are the legacy systems the client might be running on their back end? That's usually, if there's challenges, it's more in terms of their systems, not ours. We bring a team together, a SWAT team, if you will, that really holds the client's hands, engages with them throughout that whole process. There's a lot of service that's brought in to really lower the hurdle on getting live and doing that around the world, not necessarily doing one launch at a time. So usually it's a matter of weeks. It depends on the level of complexity involved.
Yeah. You're leading into my next question. What markets do you serve? So your software can work all over the world.
Yeah.
So that's genuinely literally anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. We can help a company sell anywhere you can legally sell that's not excluded due to, you know, prohibitions
sanctions.
On selling, for instance. Yeah, sanctions and whatnot.
Yeah. Okay, great. And you mentioned many customers so far in our discussion. What's your ideal customer profile or what traits do they have for anybody listening if they're potentially interested?
For CleverBridge specifically, we're very niche focused on digital products. So for us, that would be software, SaaS, cloud. It could be maintenance and support. We're not involved in physical retailing. And that focus allows us to be really specialized and successful in really optimizing that whole buyer and seller experience. So that's number one. Number two is global. If you're just selling in one market, it's not that complicated. You know, you can just set up a Stripe account. You can start accepting credit cards. But for us, it's really about helping companies on a global stage remove friction in their selling experiences. So those two things. And then the third would be revenue. I mentioned that we work with about 300 clients. Usually those clients are going to be several million dollars or more in online selling. Up to, they could be selling hundreds of millions of dollars online. We're not trying to help at this point. We're not set up to help, say, a company that's going to be doing $10,000 a year or $100,000. So if it's a million plus digital product, it might be a very good fit.
Okay. And how do you charge customers? What's your pricing model?
Typically, it's a commission basis. So we act as a reseller. So we're taking a fraction of the collected funds from the customer. And that's going to vary based on a range of factors, including the complexity of what we're supporting, the average order values, the payment methods that would be utilized. But if I were just to say kind of like a generic cost, you know, it could be somewhere between 8 and 10%. It could be lower. And that's where we can very quickly assess what the client's situation is and give a quote.
Okay, fantastic. So you don't have to invest tens of thousands of dollars. It's simply a case of if it's successful, everyone wins. And if it's potentially not a right fit, it's no big deal.
Exactly. And I guess that's one thing I would just highlight is that the total cost of ownership is very effective because you have minimal investment. You have a team of experts that do this for hundreds of clients today. So we're able to bring a lot of best practices and insights. If there's a new legal requirement regarding privacy in the European Union, we're on top of that. We have attorneys and privacy experts that are focused on that. That's our expertise. We bring a team to help with that. So absolutely. And I should say, so CleverBridge is a global company. We actually have our global headquarters in Cologne, Germany. We've got about 200 people there. We've got our US office is a significant operation too, with around 100 people or so.
That's actually interesting, because I stayed in Germany for several months last year, and it's a very cash-heavy society.
Yeah.
And I know historically the reasons for that. But yeah, I just found that interesting that it's such an advanced solution coming from a very cash-heavy place.
It's very interesting. German culture is very much, compared to Americans certainly, they're not into borrowing. So the whole thing of credit cards, that's not... Germans would generally shy away from using credit cards to pay for something. And I guess that's maybe something just to highlight for your listeners. If you reside in the United States or some countries, you may think the world buys the way you buy. And the fact is, that's obviously not the case. And sometimes it's shocking, right? We've had clients before they started working with us, they were, say, using an in-house e-commerce system. And these are sophisticated software companies. They were selling into Europe in US dollars and only on credit cards.
So many people don't use credit cards. And we were talking before the show, partly why I like crypto is it addresses, especially the unbanked. I love it for that. Because in aggregate, the unbanked is such a massive market for just everything in general. But also because credit cards are such an old technology. I didn't know until I got into this space that it was actually invented in the 50s. I think it was the charge card.
Discover or Diners or something. I can't remember.
Diners card. So yeah, it's just old technology, and you're dead right. You know, different countries pay for things very differently.
Yeah, and I should say, because I probably didn't make that clear earlier, that when I talked about the fees of CleverBridge, we take on all of those payment costs. So those are costs, and you're right, like credit card can easily be on a business transaction by itself. That can easily be over 3% goes to the credit card companies. Or if it's FX costs, those are things that we take on.
Yeah, the direct conversion, when I'm abroad using my credit card, I really don't like that, where it allows you to pay in your local currency.
Yeah.
But the charges for that are very high.
Oh, it can be a steep penalty, yeah.
I've got stuck once. I was in Spain, and the waiter, when I was paying for my meal, he didn't know what it was. He just pressed enter, whereas I should have been the one choosing whether I want to be billed in euros or in Australian dollars.
Yeah.
So people on the front lines don't necessarily know about these things. They just go next, 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 right?
Yeah.
But it can cost you a lot. I mean, thankfully, that was only 20 euros or whatever. But if it was a higher cost transaction and the staff doesn't know, you can't really reverse it then.
Right.
That's the problem. Great. Well, we've talked about a lot of stuff. Is there anything about the solution you think is very important to discuss that I might have missed?
I think we've kind of highlighted a lot of the key things. I guess if I were just to kind of summarize, it's working with a merchant or record partner like a CleverBridge, we're able to take on the heavy lifting. That's our specialty. We're very focused on optimizing that experience. Usually it pays for itself, because when we get involved, like there have been many cases where we've implemented an improved solution and the customer will see often a 10 or more percent increase in their conversion rates in the markets they're selling in, as well as much higher renewal rates. And so those renewal rates, we've had many cases where they've been 10, sometimes 20% higher. So we try to remove the friction. And I think the other thing that I'm just personally most excited about in e-commerce is just how it's changing constantly. There's so much innovation happening right now. So I think these are exciting times.
Yeah, definitely. What are you guys working on for 2021, and what are some exciting projects that are coming up?
Well, we're doing quite a lot in B2B right now. B2B is maybe almost 9 or 10 years behind the consumer world. So it's kind of like we've seen the future already with B2C. We remember when B2C companies were, oh, we're afraid of channel conflict, or we don't want to upset the retailers, to, of course, you're going to have an online storefront. And B2B is now kind of evolving there. So I'd say one is, for CleverBridge, certainly more B2B and more ways than we even anticipated. The other would be there is much more complexity now in terms of the environment that we need to work with. So I'd say modularization. we and other vendors are, you know, somebody might be using Salesforce as their system of record. So now, in that case, Cleverbridge operates as really more of like a global cash register. Another customer may want us to do the subscription management and billing. So I'd say modularization and providing services focused on the needs and outcomes that the customers require. So I think you'll see a wider range of services being offered by Cleverbridge and other companies to accommodate that increased buyer requirement for flexibility.
Great. That's fantastic. Have you seen any changes in terms of trends? Because most of your customers sell online anyway. Did you see any other sort of trends that may not be so obvious?
I think in terms of our traditional business, it's hard to say that there's a difference. I'd say where we see the trend is COVID has accelerated those other companies that haven't sold online or haven't offered e-commerce. We're seeing those companies accelerate their need to digitize. And so, for instance, I used to hear people say, oh, we want to provide a better customer experience, but it was more of a checkbox. It wasn't really an organizational priority. When I talk to enterprise companies now, it's serious. Like when they say we need to optimize our customer experience around giving self-service, that is like a top three or top four checkbox now. And they're serious about it. So I'd say that's one of the biggest changes I see is this recognition we need to be digital. You know, most salespeople in the world today, I think, are working remotely, at least in the Western world. And I think that's helped companies see we need to be digital. We can't be reliant on paper forms and workflow. This thing needs to be digitized. So I think that COVID has accelerated this by years.
Well, it's been a fantastic discussion about the solution. And as we get to the end of the podcast, I'd like to finish on a few light questions, if you're cool with that.
Yeah, great.
I'm a big reader, so I'd love to know, in the last 12 months, maybe a book or two that you've really enjoyed and got a lot of value from, and maybe your favorite money movie.
I'm going to mix it up just a little bit. So I haven't seen the movie, but I read the book and I loved it. And that's Moneyball.
I love Moneyball. Yeah, I've only seen the movie.
And what I loved about it was applying data in a way that sometimes is super disruptive to conventional thinking. When you have that model, when you have a successful model and then you can repeat it, it's mind-blowing and inspiring. So I'd say Moneyball for me, of something that was made into a movie, that would be one of my favorite books of all time. And I'm not a baseball guy, but I love the story. And it's fun seeing that play out now in other industries too. And in terms of like, I do read quite a bit. I'd say in terms of a business book that I read probably 15 plus years ago, but I think about, it's on my mind a lot, is Innovator's Dilemma by Christensen.
Amazingly, I haven't read that yet. It's been on my Amazon buy list for probably about 6 years. I need to get to it.
I love that book. And I feel like when I talk to companies, everyone is living the Innovator's Dilemma in one fashion or another. They're either being the disruptor, where they are the company trying to figure out how to maintain their current business while embracing disruption at the same time. Yeah, those are two of my favorite books.
I think I'm going to push that up my list this year. That's a top priority because so many people mention it too that I follow on Twitter. So I'm going to do that. Nice recommendations there. Thank you. If we finish up in terms of how can customers get in touch with you, obviously there's cleverbridge.com and on Twitter you guys are at cleverbridge. Anything else you wanted to add there?
I also have a Talking B2B blog on topics related to e-commerce and digital innovation. And then also feel free to reach out to me at Doug Kavanis on LinkedIn.
Sure. I'll put your LinkedIn in the show notes as well. Thank you so much, Doug.
I really enjoyed it.
That was great. I really enjoyed it too. And hopefully we'll be able to meet up one day when the world's open.
That would be great. Thanks again for the conversation.
Thank you. Cheers.